to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard, may be handled in executive session, or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. Board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent designee or take the issue under advisement. And we have 1 hour scheduled for this public hearing.
All right, if you want to go down.
There is no one scheduled.
Okay, so no one signed up to speak on the budget. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak on the budget at this time? Wow, it's a big budget. All right, I guess we will move right on to persons to be heard on non-agenda items. The same rules go for persons to be heard on non-agenda items. Member Welton, if you'll read through who's signed up for that.
No one has signed up for non-agenda items either.
All right. Would anybody like to be heard on non-agenda items for this school board meeting? Okay. So we have no one to speak on non-agenda items. We do have another chance later in the meeting for non-agenda items if someone does choose to speak. So administrative reports.
Madam President, there is not an administrative report this evening. Thank you.
And I don't see any of our representatives here from Palmer or Wasilla. Is there anyone from city or borough? Wow, this is going to be a short meeting, guys. Too bad there's no students who have to do their Okay. Superintendent update. Why don't we start with Ms. McPhail on the Student Advisory Board?
The School Board Committee is formulating a presentation for the administration at our next meeting for our resolution. And the varsity basketball teams are preparing for state this weekend, and our next meeting is April 24th at the district office starting at 9 a.m.
Thank you, Ms. McPhail. We did give permission for our student advisory board to take your seats at the next meeting. So they will be operating all the systems and operating the Robert's rules from the seats for which you sit. So it'll be a great meeting, and our young leaders actually will do an excellent demonstration, I believe. So thank you, Ms. McPhail. I just, before we start, want to talk a little bit about probably why over the last few years, things have become less of a mystery about finances and revenue and budgets, and we try to keep folks up to date online. Every presentation we have is online. It's easily accessible. Staff will talk, and so many times, I don't want the board to feel like, well, what's going on in the school district? Because nobody's here to talk. We all know that generally, when the pot boils over is when folks start to come in, and I just feel as though we're having a great year, and our schools are great by choice, and it's by the work of the people in them and of the parents at home. So the students and staff who are in our schools, our folks at home, as well as our community members and elected officials, we are I guess synergizing to really create a good experience for kids and staff. And so I'm very proud to be a part of that. And in that light, I did spend quite a bit of time last week providing evidence on many bills that are now being heard in the legislative committees, in regard to transportation and some other items that in addition to working with a technology issue, that will really bring revenue to our school district to continue to keep keep what we have and then still move forward. And so to preserve every single teacher we have, every staff member we have, and be able to grow and prosper as well. And so there were three separate hearings. Too bad they couldn't be all on the same day, but they were all on three separate days. So we had staff here ready to provide the evidence needed and the testimony needed for those bills to provide assistance financially specifically. Just prior to going into the budget, which is on here as a specific item, I want to let you know, as Kendra did, that it is March Madness. And a couple of days ago, we had a Sioux Valley team compete. And so Sioux Valley is a 2A school, and I would like to know that our 2A school made it to state. Starting tomorrow is the 3A and 4A tournament at the Sullivan Arena, and I want you to know that we have a 3A school in our district called Houston High School. Houston High School has a team represented in the state tournament. We have 4A schools rather in our district as well: Colony High School, Palmer High School, and Wasilla High School. And I believe amongst them there's four teams that are also competing in the state tournament. And so I don't think this is by mistake. It is by the organization of our schools, the volunteer of staffing. I think it is part of keeping our schools open for community use. We cooperate with community to get kids exercising and going out young. And so I'm just really proud of that's just basketball. I can mention co-curriculars, the Poetry Out Loud, and we will have our honoring ceremony next board meeting, but Colony High School student took first place in the Poetry Out Loud yesterday at Juno. And so MATSU students are performing well, and we just appreciate that. So in addition, you'll see shortly coming up after March Madness is the testing in early April, proms, concerts, and graduations, and the like. And so it's going to get quite busy, but it is a fun time to be an educator in MATSU Valley. The budget presentation that you'll see tonight is in reference, in a PowerPoint, in reference to a new manner in which the budget is being presented to you. Over time, questions have come into more specifics about, as a district, we are responsible for the $214 million, that is the large portion, and a lot of the information that we present is the aggregate. It's the items all put together in a certain function. And many of your questions are, well, you know, at this school, what happens here? And what about this program? And so Luke and his team, really over the last couple of months, have created a document that really takes into consideration every school and every employee. And I do have some good news, is that through that, and actually touching 11,000 entry codes and 11,000 different accounts and cells, if you will, in an Excel spreadsheet, he and his team, as well as Katie Gardner, have come up with a very detailed look at the budget and what revenue is actually going to each school, and how many staff how much staff does this mean, and how many students, and where are they, and what are we spending on instruction. You'll have that detailed information. We did post a draft on in your packet with your feedback, and we had two board members in today providing excellent feedback. We're going to make those updates and then publish this so that everyone has access to where exactly does the money go, and what do we get? What's our bang for our buck? And so an overview is going to be provided today by Luke, but this is just a manner in which we went to Munis so that we can more accurately and in a detailed way say how much are we really spending per program, per person, for our results. And Munis kind of failed us in that manner because there are so many different indicators, if you will, on a person's benefits, where they work, their funding source, things like that. So Munis couldn't deliver. They're coming out with a new version, so hopefully they've taken our feedback. But our staff did this ourselves. And so we took 1,800 FTE, about 2,400 employees, and find out to the dime how much people make, to the dime on how much we're spending on textbooks and how much we're spending on professional development, furniture, technology. And in that, when we presented our budget prior to this time, without some of the known items that we would need, such as what are we getting? Is the BSA going to change? We took an assumption that the borough would give us 3%. We made an assumption that insurance would be 6%. I'm hoping it's going to be less, and I feel strongly that that still could happen. But we put in those assumptions on the larger end so that we could, without a fund balance, that we could actually provide for our school district. By taking a look at each individual school, each individual employee, down to the very detail, our $5.9 million, I feel confident that it's more around $4.5 million rather than $5.9. And so when we provided information to schools about their staffing, we were able to recoup at this point in time, not just teachers, but many staff members that we believe we can retain in the district, even if things don't change with the BSA or transportation and things like that. So if they do change, we're even doing better. And the goal, we know, and we've heard loud and clear from the board, is take care of the classrooms, keep staff in our schools, and when we have to make cuts, they should come elsewhere. And so just this past week, schools were given the information about their staffing. You're going to be voting on a balanced budget this evening, and that balanced budget will have a reduction of 45 staff members. Not all teachers, some are teachers, some are district office folks, and some are paraprofessionals. And so making that balanced budget, because that's the law, we have to balance it before we put it on to the borough. But I do believe the momentum in Juneau is good to recoup some of the funds that we have to use, operating funds that we have to use to cover transportation and other items. And we're going to look to do that. So when Luke presents, he's just going to share the detailed information. I believe it's probably going to cause you to ask more detailed questions and have some more detailed input, which is exactly the purpose. Ms. Rutherford actually put in an hour and a half of detailed questions already this afternoon. So, and it was actually highly appreciated, because when we put our brains together, we're going to make a better school district and give our community more information so that they, when we move in to each new year and to each new program, that we have our eyes wide open about the costs and the outcomes. So with that, I am going to have Luke present. Right after he presents, we will he'll move right into some bond information. We do have Mr. Bechtel from the borough here, who is showing up, so that in case you have detailed questions, he may answer. But we are seeing lots of movement on that as well. One good thing is Glacier View has a new gym floor. Our elementaries are getting gym floors. So this spring is really moving. Later on in the agenda, you will also vote on the 95% work on two schools. And so, like I said, we are moving right along. Kids are learning, teachers are teaching, working diligently every day and every night, really, to do what we can to make the very best school district for our kids in Alaska, right here in Mat-Su. So thank you, and I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Fulp. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Promo, President Pauscher, members of the school board. Just presenting tonight what would be a proposed or at this point a recommended preliminary budget that is balanced. This budget, as Dr. Promo mentioned, involved a lot of work drilling down into the data and looking at about close to 12,000 account codes. And so, as we mentioned in a meeting, I believe in January, we discussed some of the difficulties that we were having with the Munis budgeting module. I brought that to your attention as a school board, and we mentioned we were going to take a different route with developing the budget this year, and we have more or less gone down that path, and the results are favorable at this point. So just to begin the presentation, if we could get up there, thank you. Previously presented, I just want to bring us back to what we've looked at before in terms of the overall budget picture, and what you see is the star up there for previously presented. I mentioned that if there's ever a chart that you've seen before, it'll have that signifier, and you can see a $5.9 million deficit for FY14. That's based on a projected enrollment of 17,317 students. And so you can see total revenue as well as total expense and specific line items for the state on behalf portion. And that's important to mention the state on behalf portion of $39 million there because it does play a factor into this overall budget. Well, what we've done since is getting to a balanced budget. So we've gone through all of these different line items. And in doing so, with the majority of the expenses being in salaries and benefits, we were able to get a much more clear, much more precise, accurate picture as to what it would take to move from one year to the next in terms of every single employee, as Dr. Paramo mentioned, and all of the benefits that are attached to that employee, from PERS to TERS, SBS, healthcare, and whatnot. So we were able to identify every single line item within the budget and analyze that. That provided some savings, as you'll see here in a bit, as we got a more accurate picture as to what those costs were. And in order to present a balanced budget, and at this point, you know, our presentation on March 6th was all about how this budget at this point is very preliminary, and it will be changing and whatnot, and we discussed some of the assumptions that we had built into the preliminary budget and how those could impact with regards to some assumptions we made with regards to health insurance or our intensive needs students and whatnot, and we presented that on March 6th. And so the emphasis was that much of this could be changing, and as we move through this presentation, I'll just highlight some of those things. But what we were able to do to get to a balanced budget is what we had to do to get to a balanced budget was increase the class size by one student at all of our different grade levels. And so that what that amounted to was a reduction of 45 FTE. We also did reduce some staffing with district office staff, as Dr. Paramo mentioned, and paraprofessionals to get to that 45 FTE. So they're not all teachers. And this, again, is just preliminary. This is just so that we could present a balanced budget based on what's required in terms of submitting this to the borough. And so this is the adjusted ratios and metrics. You can see here that we've gone from grades K through 2. We were at 25-1 in the current year, or we are at 25-1. And you can see it's reflected for the 2013-2014 school year as 26-1, and so on and so forth. And so that just shows the increase of one student at each of those different grade levels for the ratios and metrics. So the FY14 preliminary budget as it stands, this is a side-by-side comparison as to what you've seen before of the $5.9 million deficit next to what is reflected in this large budget book. And this budget book is within your packet and is available if will be available for hard copy, one for whoever requested a hard copy. And then we'll also print one once we have some of the final adjustments made here. But so we can see here that the FY of 14 preliminary budget differs slightly from the projected amount, not necessarily in revenue. You can see that the majority of the revenue stayed constant. The one item that did change within revenue is we adjusted the on behalf portion for the budget. So we adjusted both the expense and the revenue, and that was based on what the state sent us in terms of a new actuarial and employer rate. The difference of the two is the on-behalf rate. We apply that to whoever within our staff is TERS or PERS eligible to come up with a ballpark figure. Again, this is revenue and expense that we are required to book, yet we receive no cash in the bank for this adjustment. It's an adjustment required by the state to place on our financials, yet it has no net impact to the budget. So this is really just an accounting entry, but we made it a little bit more well-defined here. It amounts to an overall decrease of 3.29%. We're still planning on utilizing our full fund balance of $2.4 million for a total projected revenue and fund balance of $234 million. So if you were to take this budget without the fund balance or the on behalf, you would be looking at $194 million budget. With fund balance, it's closer to $196, $197 million. As far as salaries go, or as far as expenses go, we have a reduction in salaries. We were at $114,500,000. Again, that was a large ballpark projection. We've now narrowed that down with looking at every single line item of detail, as well as reducing the 45 FTE from the staffing equation, and we have now a figure of $110.5 million. And the benefits have also slightly reduced. Those were all adjusted based on what health insurance elections and whatnot, and then the state on behalf again has a equal adjustment based on both the revenue and the expense match there. Utilities were adjusted as well. We did decrease that amount slightly. It still is 14% greater than FY12, so we're feeling pretty good there. And then the non-personnel costs did have a slight decrease as well. The transfers to other funds, again, that's the transfer to pupil transportation. And while we had an assumption that there would be no required transfer to food service in our original projection, we have since, in analyzing that data as well, realized that we may need to have a $75,000 transfer to food service, and so that's represented as well. The bottom line you can see here is zero, so we've gone from a $5.9 million deficit to zero. And this is more or less what's in the budget book. I will move into that here briefly. I just want to highlight the important part at this point in the budget process is that the request to the borough, and that is what will be in the resolution as well tonight, it stays constant at $51.2 million. There was no change to that with the projection that you saw on March 6th and the preliminary budget as balanced today, March 20th. It still remains 51.2, and that is a 3% increase over the current year, and that's the pertinent information at this point in the budget process. Again, the per pupil local funding comparison is what we're drawing folks' attention to in terms of the overall goal or objective with the local contribution. And stated goal was to get the per pupil funding amount for MATSU between Fairbanks and Anchorage here. You can see that it's slightly lower than Fairbanks and well below Anchorage in terms of a per pupil funding cost. So the preliminary budget document includes four sections. This new format, there's an introductory, organizational, financial, and informational section. These different sections will be updated as we move through this budget process. While we may include additional information for release to the public in some of these sections, what will not change after the board adopts a budget tonight is the financial. All the numbers are set once the board adopts it. So this is more or less the format of the budget. It creates an easy to read document in terms of a user-friendly document. It's fairly large, so it can be possibly difficult for someone to want to even open it up and peruse it, but we try to make it as easy to read as possible. So this is the purpose of it, is having four sections and within it a clear organization and flow. So the budget is a dynamic, living document that will continue to need to be revised and updated as we gain new information. And I just want to reemphasize that point because next month, as the legislative session adjourns and we learn more about our funding picture at the local level, we will undoubtedly be adjusting our budget and financial spending plan. So with this presentation, I just wanted to draw your attention to the financial section for the budget. We utilized the full account code. We used fund, location, function, program, and object. The state requires us to use a uniform chart of accounts. I spent some time with Member Rutherford and Member Cheesham this afternoon discussing the chart of accounts. And the reason why I want to draw your attention to it tonight is because there is, in using the full chart of accounts to map out the budget, we were able to show reports in multiple ways. And so there's a lot of summary reports that show the information in different ways. They all tie out. They all amount to the same number in the end. But in showing it in different ways, you can draw some information and gain a different perspective in the different views that are presented. And so it's good for comparison's sake and whatnot. So the summary expense schedules begin on page 12. They continue on for about 50 pages. And then the site-specific expense views begin on page 72. Within those site-specific pages, you're looking at school and department sites. On one page, you have expense projections and history, so you can see those comparisons. And on the next page, you have school corresponding staffing levels that are taken from those historical years, as well as what's been projected. And I just want to bring one up for the sake of tonight's meeting and cover the format with the board tonight. You can see, as this is a new format, I just want to cover it briefly. We have three prior years of actuals. We have FY 10, 11, and 12. And this is the expense that's been cost-centered at this particular school, which is location 001. That's just our account code for this school. And they are in location order. That's Palmer High School. And so you can see the personnel cost as the first subtotal, and then the non-personnel services make up the remainder of their budget. It includes the metrics that we utilized on the second page for this school, so it still remains Palmer High School. And you can see their certified FTE and classified FTE. And the metrics are defined by the classroom teacher. So you take the total ADM divided by the classroom teacher, and that's your class size ratio. However, we did show this in graphical form, so you can see the total location values of the total budget for this school over time and what we're projecting for FY14, as well as the ADM enrollment versus staffing, and see the relationship between total enrollment and the staffing levels at a particular high school, or any school for that matter, as well as the district-wide departments. For the district-wide offices and departments, we use the total district enrollment in relation to the FTE for that particular site. And as you look at these charts and whatnot, I just encourage you to view the numbers above. They're all represented in the schedules of data above the chart. And so if you are unsure as to what is making up that number, or why is it larger or smaller than the prior year, what's making up the variance, you can look at the chart and just see all the data represented there. So this more or less was done for every single location code within the district. And so you can see for the operating budget a very clear picture as to what's happening at every school and every department, and what's happened over the last 3 years leading up to this time. The revenue budget is not a whole lot different than what we talked about earlier. The major portion of it, 72%, is state revenue. The local appropriation makes up 26%. This is the revenue without on behalf. If we did include on behalf, it would be represented under the state revenue, and so that would make the local appropriation just under 25%. The 70-30 rule, this is again a chart without on behalf, and this is just for consistency throughout the budget. You will see these charts without the on behalf portion. Again, that's money that we do not receive. It's an accounting entry that we are required to book. However, with the 70-30 rule, the state does allow us to include on behalf expense within the calculation for 70-30. This chart, however, does not include on behalf. It's at 75% instruction, which is well above the threshold of 70% if we did include the on behalf portion, which is tied to the salaries, which are then categorized by the function. The majority of our teachers are in the instructional area, so it just drives this number up even higher, closer to 80%, which is one of the highest percentages in the state. So that's a very good thing for the district. The expense by object just shows you very clear detail as to how the overall expense budget is broken up by these required objects. Again, these objects are required by the State of Alaska Uniform Chart of Accounts. We report on them within our budget, but also in our year-end audit. And then this is our expense by object with on behalf, and you can just see how the numbers change slightly. So I put that there for comparison's sake. That's the presentation for tonight. That is the preliminary budget as it stands today. If there's any questions, I can certainly answer those at this time.
Member Lacey.
Yes, through the chair, I'm looking at page 10 of that financial document you sent out to us. And I see here risk management at $1.7 million. That's factored in as an expense, and I believe that's something that we can lower and put that money back into a classroom. We just said that this is a balanced budget with 45 less teachers. Am I correct there?
Mr. Fulp?
I'm looking at page 10. I don't see the...
What you sent us out is a
monthly
statement. That's the current...
That's the current year,
yeah.
I think.
Right, but historically, since I've been here for 3 years, that keeps going up and up and up. To me, that's an expense that we shouldn't have to pay, and that money can go back into our school system.
Through the chair, that's an excellent observation by Member Lacey, and you know, anytime we do see operational costs that... Anytime that we do see those operational costs that are outside of the classroom, we obviously want to avoid as many of them as possible and control the costs as best we can. One of the things that our Chief Financial Officer, Rebecca Wright, informed me of is those are all not claims or workers' comp claims, and they do include our premiums that we pay for our insurance. So, but it's a good point, and it's always something that we want to address when we see those numbers. We want to try to keep them as low as possible so that we can funnel even more money to the classroom. With that said, the presentation of the pie chart that I did show of the district closing in on 80% of instructional costs or directing 80% of the budget to the classroom is one of the highest in the state. So,
Member Welton?
So I can't find it right now. I know I saw it about the school board's budget. Our benefits were about $100,000 dropped. Does that have to do with PERS or some other accounting measure?
Through the chair, Member Welton, that's a great observation. We actually discussed that this afternoon with Member Cheesham and Member Rutherford. That is a comparison to the actual current year budget, which is not a known actual number. And so I just want to make sure that folks are aware that it may not, the budget might not reflect what will be spent in that category for the current year. But we are looking at that. We'll continue to look at that for the upcoming revision of this document. However, if it did need to be adjusted, it would be a minor adjustment when taking the whole budget in total. And to that point, we have budgeted 1% of salaries as a contingency line item for just that, because it is so difficult to pinpoint where health insurance elections or whatnot will occur from. You do need to create some buffer in total budgeting of salaries and benefits. That's a normal practice within the budget. It exists under location 699.
Member Lacey?
Yes, back to the $1.7 million again. There's a lot of scholarly articles about workers' compensation and about this much money that we spend on it. I know for a fact that we could reduce this by at least $1 million. And I would like to implore people to take that into consideration, because we shouldn't have $1.7 million in this kind of expenditure period. Thank you.
Member Larson.
Yeah, on workman's comp, as I assume that's insurance goes up every year, and by double digits, does it go up every year, like regular insurance would?
Through the president, Member Larson, yes, the premiums tend to go up very at very high rates, because they are made up mainly of medical expense.
And that's two bunches of that's your high and low, right? I mean, you have to buy for a cap and then go above that. So how many different policies are we buying under that?
Through the President, Member Larson, I don't have an exact number for the different policies we carry. I do know that as a self-insured organization, we have multiple. We actually received a book from our broker that outlined every single one and showed how they coordinate benefits between the policies, and we can definitely get that information to you.
Member Larson.
It's a little hard to in the budget to follow transportation cost. How would I follow that overall, including everything from mileage to district vehicles being used, so forth and so on? Where would I find all that? And that's including like teachers' mileage, principals' mileage, school employees in different schools that have school district automobiles that they use, this kind of thing. Okay. Just kind of curious on that. Thank you.
Through the President, Member Larson, that would be under Object Code 420 for the most part. We don't have that level of detail to show the difference between mileage and, let's say, a trip an employee takes for professional development in or out of state. It's all categorized under 420 Object Code for all of the different sites and locations.
I just wanted to point out that home to school is a different budget for transportation.
So when somebody gets called out and they leave their home and they go on site to whatever they're called out to, is that what you're talking, home to school?
No, I was talking about transporting students. That's a different budget.
No,
I'm
talking about staff, total staff travel, such as getting called out on maintenance, or an employee going from one school to another, like nurses, or I assume we have different employees going from one school to another. But none of that you can follow that. Is that correct? It's all jumbled up under the. Go ahead. You can explain it to me.
Thank you. Through the President, Member Larson, yes, we can get you that detail. We do track mileage at that level. However, for the budget, we do need to make it present it on one page, and so we've rolled up a lot of those account codes. They're not visible. We can drill down into that and get that to you.
Well, what I'm saying, they don't really reflect in a school then, do they, as part of that school budget? Does that mileage and everything come out of? Go ahead.
Through the President, most schools, it will reflect through there because they will assign their own mileage and that account code. But the majority of miles put on roads is by operation and maintenance, and as well as our student support services. They provide the most movement within the district. And so you'll see the majority probably of the transportation, what you're talking about, adult movement around the district, is in those two programs or those two departments, operations and maintenance, and student support services rather than schools.
And to that point, through the President, those two departments actually have fleet vehicles, and so they would not be booking mileage, but they would be incurring a fuel expense.
Fuel expense, but we got to maintain the vehicles too. Then where does that fall in, purchase and maintaining of vehicles? And those vehicles, do they have a, you know, estimated time that you have to turn them over and purchase new ones?
Yeah. Through the President, Member Larson, yes, the vehicles we identify as a fixed asset and a capitalized fixed asset. We identify a useful life for those vehicles. There is a maintenance cost to them that would be charged to Object Code 440. Which is other other expenses, there is a cost. That's true. So,
if you don't mind, if I carry on just a little bit, then I'll catch you later on a lot of these issues. On the vehicles, is it like a 5-year turnover, and then you put them into a surplus? Is that how it goes, or how do you do that? What's the life of a vehicle, for instance?
through the president, it is actually a useful life that's determined and audited by our auditors. I don't have that information with me right now, but about a 12-year life is what you can expect to see for any automobile or vehicle of that nature.
And I have to say, I've seen ones that are lots older driving around with that sticker on the side. Ms. Rutherford?
My question is more about a process from this point on. So I don't know who to address it to, but as far as presenting to the assembly and walking them through this and answering their questions, I guess, because it's so, it makes me sad that I feel like we have to go into this, you know, prepared to fight for what we need, but we do, and making things clear, like the fact that this budget already reflects a cut of 45 people. I mean, some of those elementary schools that are showing one teacher less next year, they already have very few. When you go from 12 to 11 teachers, that's a drastic cut. That's a whole classroom full of kids. So how and who will sort of sell this thing to this assembly?
What we have done in the past is presented to the assembly. We're getting much better at it than we used to be. I'll turn that over to Dr. Paramo to explain.
Thank you, Madam President. Generally, the president or someone that he or she assigns would present with Mr. Fulp and myself. I did speak last night to the assembly. It is not a surprise. We have already talked to the manager as well personally that they will expect a 3% increase. That is our assumption that that's what we will receive. I mentioned that last night. But that our balanced budget, I did tell them, includes 45 FTE reductions. I did share that there's some bills out to still assist in that. But in order for it to be balanced, there's a reduction in their school district. And I shared that. But we, you know, said we look positive, we do some other things. And so our expectation is that 3% comes in, and so I tried to lay that out for them. But we could at any time answer their questions, and like I said, the manager has already called over to say when they were creating their budget, they asked us what you could get. And of course, we can say, you know what, we're not anywhere near the cap. We are maybe 78%, about 80% of what they possibly could give us. We should just ask for 100%. And that has been done in the past where the response has been, you're going to get zero. And so our tactic has been to say, we understand that there's a self-imposed cap of 1.5% at the borough level that they cannot themselves spend over that. And so we have suggested and provided evidence that and I said it last night, I'll guarantee you a good school district with excellent teachers and good programs and a positive outcome so that you can seek industry, which they want to do, but they have to support us. And in supporting us, we're not going to be unrealistic. Last year, we thought 3% was realistic, but last year at the same time, I presented and said, I'm going to come back to you for 3% more next year until we are in size-wise between Anchorage and Fairbanks, and we believe that we should be supported in that manner per pupil. The amount, just so you know, that Fairbanks gets in dollar amount is less than us, but we have 3,000 more children. And so we like to present it per pupil about how much is going, and then we also let them know that the monies then are derived back per pupil. So our charter schools get their local contribution as well as the state contribution, just like all of our other programs. And so we've been very transparent with it. It's not going to be a surprise, but they will ask detailed questions like you suggested. And the president, myself, and Luke Fulp will be present for their questions, but it will not be a surprise. And but I just say, I mean, we're willing to give you the outcomes, but we need the support.
Member Larson.
Yeah, on that same note, on your presentation, from year to year, the parents, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I know you will, you'll have to find me wrong, which I am often, but From year to year, we're going to run into a deficit because of insurance increases, benefit increases, and cost of living increases. We're never going to really catch up unless the borough or the state pitches in. And I think most of the districts are in the same boat, that this year we're 5.9%, or you brought it down to 5.4%, was it, or 4.9%? Well, our budget reflects 5.9, but the next fiscal year isn't going to be any more rosy as this fiscal year, because insurance cost, employee cost, and cost of living. Is that correct?
Through the president, that's in fact correct. And what we presented at our budget open houses was a chart that showed the structural deficit over time. One of the things that is important to note for this budget and the preliminary budget as it stands today is that we're utilizing all of our fund balance with the projected budget for FY14. So that's one-time money. That's not going to be there in the year after. And that just makes that deficit even more large and whatnot.
One follow-up question, Madam President. And if we would have some funds left over, 1% of our budget, which would be $2 or $3 million, which everybody always oohs and ahs at, but it's only 1% of a budget because you're trying to hold the line. If we should have that 1% left over, 50% of it gets lost to the borough anyway. It drifts away because we can't keep the 100% for our reserve. Is that correct also?
Through the president, Member Larson, it would be any increase over the unassigned fund balance amount or number that we had for the fiscal year ending the prior year. So, yes, you are correct. If it's an increase, then 50% lapses back to the borough.
Member Chisholm.
Well, I just wanted to underline what I think Member Larson's point was. I mean, we're talking about 45 teachers this year. With 3% rise the year after that, if that's all, and if we're getting pinched from the state level as well, it's another 45. And you know, there's a long-term problem, and someone... someone has to come out and say that we want to really make our schools and our children the priority here. And it's sad that we are basically looking at a firewall, trying to build a firewall here as our education system is being dismantled brick by brick. And I don't know, it's not a question, and I apologize.
Is there any more questions? All right. Thank you so much.
Sorry, Madam President. The bond project update, we did send out in the Board Connect some updates. I would just like to say, as I mentioned before, we have a new floor, a beautiful new floor at Glacier View, and the administration at the borough level, as well as our administration, is really cogently working and doing well, that they released some of the projects to us. And those projects for the elementary playgrounds, we had a team of elementary principals in. We're using economy of scale, standardizing the equipment at all of our schools so that the replacement costs, the safety features, and all those types of things can be utilized across the board, across the district, and we can get the most bang for our buck. So that started today, as well as our gym floors. When they were originally built in many of our buildings, it is basically tile put over concrete. The new floors do have some padding for kids that like to run and play, and so we don't lose any teeth, things like that. So if you had any specific questions, you are going to hear in detail and be able to ask about the two buildings, which are quite significant from that bond. But I just wanted to let you know that there are many, many small projects that are going to go on that our community can finally see the fruition of their efforts to pass that bond. So if there's any specific question, Mr. Bechtel's always here to answer with Mr. Fulp, and I just have always asked him to be present to be able to answer your questions.
Member Larson.
At 95% on the two buildings completion, when would they go out for bid?
Can we wait until we get to that? Oh, yeah. That's action items coming up here, so okay. We can ask that.
Should I ask that on each individual one?
I'm sure I'm they'll let us know now that they know you want to know. Member Rutherford?
Just to be clear, because lots of kids are wondering, does that mean the playground equipment will be installed this summer, be there next fall?
Through the president, I believe that's a plan. The borough has turned those playgrounds over to the school district in terms of the acquisition and the projects in general. So that's done through an LOA, and they've been working with us very closely on that.
Madam President, through that, that would be for lockers and also the playgrounds. We plan to do that. In addition to that, we have the four re-roofs of schools were added through an addendum to add those for the money that's remaining from the other re-roof job. So that was very cooperative. Also, last night at Assembly, they approved the $15 million more of the school bonds being sold. So that should help us to get a lot of the projects going this summer that we needed those funds to do that.
In addition, of course, all the fields are going to be touched, including the two that were already done.
Member Larson.
The playground equipment was a different fund of money, isn't that correct? That was from last year's grant from the.
Well, there's two through the president, member Larson. We had two different pots of money for that. One was through a grant, and another one was through the bond itself. And the one we're speaking about is specifically for the bond, which is a larger pot of money. And we're hoping to do that through a letter of authorization through the school district to make that happen quicker.
And what happened to the money from the grant, or the playground equipment?
That's already here. That equipment's already here.
Yes, and through the president, I can answer that. The reason we went after those legislative grants was due to that we have, I believe, five properties that were not owned, and so they didn't qualify for the 70-30 split in the bond. And so what we did was request from our legislators that can we have $75,000 per site to keep everything similar. Most of those sites are charter schools, and so you might notice that Birch Tree did install theirs last year when we had received it. Other schools will be installing them. So it was a matter of the property for which we do not own is why we went out to legislative grant, and they did give us those. And so the different schools are just in planning with them. Front Terrace, of course, wants to hold on to theirs until they have a different site and a permanent site. So we can hold on to those for 5 years, and that's some of the plans. So they are really individualized at that point, the schools that property isn't owned.
All right. Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Yes, Member Lacey has requested a break. We'll take 10 minutes. All right, so we're back in session. Next on our list is the consent agenda. Can I have someone move the consent agenda?
I move the consent agenda. That's item A, the minutes of March 6, 2013. Item B, 13071, school board policy review.
Item C,
13-072, high school graduation qualifying exam waivers.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any objection to moving this? Passing this? Okay. Since we are all in attendance, I don't have to roll call, so if there's no objection, this has been passed. Moving on to action items.
I'll move item A, 13073, Matsu Day School, 95% design approval.
All right, do we have any public?
I'll second.
I'm sorry, seconded, thank you. Do we have any public who'd like to speak on this, make any comment? All right, so we're right on to to the presentation, if you would, please.
This is on?
Yes. Pardon me. I'm a Mac guy, I'm sorry. Slide sorter, slide master. Thank you. It's down there, yes. Right, there we go. Thank you. It's on the left side on a Mac. I apologize. My name is Chris Whitting-Savins. I'm with Wolf Architecture. Gary's here. He's missing part of his vocal cord, so I'm gonna be channeling him as best I can. We are updating you tonight for our submittal and your approval on the Matsu Day School, which we've been working on. The 95% was turned in for estimate last week, and we have been, okay, there we go. Pardon me again. I now know how it works. Okay. We turned the 95% submittal in to the estimators last week. We've been working with consultant coordination through this week, and we expect to be proceeding with our schedule for this. I worked with putting together the final finishes for the interior and making color selections. Actually, there's a board in the back of the room. If you have the opportunity, you can take a look at that. We did present with that to the design review committee and administration, including Dr. Paramo, who is in attendance for that. Have been working to go over that 95% with the district personnel, including operations and maintenance folks we met with yesterday, and have been working through and have received our approvals with deed and working on permitting for construction with the Fire Marshal's office. This morning, actually, I met with our project manager and the artists who were selected for the 1% for Art and reviewed some of the opportunities for their integration of art into the project, which we're all really excited about. It's a little different method than has been followed traditionally, in that we're actually able to work within the design to integrate the art, and that's exciting for us as architects, and I hope it results in a better and more seamless integration process in the end, so that the construction is together with the art installation. We completed an energy audit on the project, which was requested by deed, and we were able to show that the project as designed is 41% would receive 41% greater efficiency than a code standard. It's in the ballpark, in a similar ballpark as recently completed LEED projects that have been completed recently for the district. We are on schedule to answer Member Lacey's question that he raised earlier for a early April request for proposal to go out, and anticipating then an early May bid date followed by a June construction start. We are on budget at $9.7 million and are formulating several additive alternates just to make sure that that is being met. And with the estimated occupancy date of July of 2014 in time for the 2014-2015 school year. I believe that most of these have been seen before. This is just a couple of views of the exterior. This is near the entrance on the southwest corner. We've not made any real substantive changes or amendments to the design since you reviewed it at 65%. We've moved forward with development and coordination with mechanical and electrical. We did make one shift in moving the project back a little bit further to the east in the site to accommodate parking requirements. And have largely been focusing on evolving the interiors and moving the project forward. These are a couple of views in the interior lobby corridor area where we have the entrance vestibule and movement between the elementary and middle school, high school separated wings. Read 180 and media classrooms are on the left. So I can take any questions now.
Member Larson.
At one time, there was talk about state agencies being part of this. Was that never happened, never materialized? Additional space for them?
Member Larson, to the chair, at this time, we do have counseling rooms included in the design in the administrative areas. I know that there has been an effort, and either Lucy Hope or Lee Bronfail may want to take that question a little further than I. But at this point in time, we have not made any additional square footage added additions to the design for those additional agency spaces.
Dr. Perlmo.
Yes, thank you, Madam President. We did request a legislative grant for that, and it would be built and an addition be made if that grant was awarded. I believe it's about $390 million to be able to add that space. We're going to continue to work with our legislators and other, or million rather. No, $390,000, not $390 million. We're going to build a really nice building. $390,000. And that is pending whether we receive that or not. And it can be built at a later time and designed. And so it's similar to Career Tech, where it's built in a way that additions can be added on later. But it was only part of the plan if we receive the money.
Mr. Wolf.
I just want to add to that. Because that's probably going to happen, we've upsized the fans to handle that. So the mechanical systems will be sized to handle that whenever they decide to go forward with it. We've kind of made sure that the infrastructure is capable of handling that extra heating and cooling.
Member Larson.
And I really like the design of the building, and it looks very nice, and I assume that addition is kind of designed to flow with this building also. It's not like we're going to move a portable in there. And,
correct.
You know, like we do with all the other schools.
There are a few close by, I understand, but that's not the intention. The addition would be, and actually we've spent some time looking at that, would be added on to the west side. It was one of the reasons that we shifted the building back to the east a bit in order to accommodate that potential for an additional amount of square footage for the counselors. Yes.
Member Cheatham.
Well, thank you. And I'm just looking at, there's a couple slides back, and I'm looking on this one. There's an image of the office with the window. And it's a beautiful design with an angled wall. But I'm wondering if that's a security issue where somebody could hide, you know, maybe if you had that wall more of an angle, it'd be something where somebody wouldn't be able to hide behind that corner there.
Excuse me, to Member Cheesham through the chair. The lobby view to the west, is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Okay. That is a view that's looking from the elementary school wing back towards the entry vestibule and to the administrative area. The sloped wall on the right is leading into the library or media 180 room. And that, I'll just say that there will be probably more coverage with cameras in this facility than exist at any of your other schools. I believe we have somewhere around 18 cameras in this facility covering various parts of it. And there's also a security officer in the facility, but we've tried to be very mindful of having as few kind of places for children or people to hide as possible. This view actually, there's a camera that points directly toward this area. The wall to the right is actually a doorway. There's a doorway right into the Reed 180 room at that location. So it's not a hidden passage. It's actually, there's a door directly to that. And we're looking right towards the glass vestibule entry, beyond which is the administrative secretary and receptionist.
Oh, thank you.
Member Larson.
Just one quick question. Of course, you've designed cameras in there, but you don't know what the system's going to be like, I assume, or what the loop is going to be how long it's going to be saved, the material, this type of thing.
Member Larson, through the chair, the system is one that we've worked through with the district's IT department. It will be to their standard. We'll have a direct feed to three separate monitor locations in the facility, the security officer, the principal's office, and above the administrative secretary's office on the wall. I would defer to the IT department for how long they retain those files in their data banks.
Thank you.
Are there any more questions?
Yeah, one. Oh, no, no.
Okay. All right. So we have a presentation before us. We've had our questions. Is there any discussion? Member Welton.
I just want to say this is a great, great idea. And I'm so supportive of all the people who put their time and effort into this. Having been the mental health counselor at Big Lake Elementary School back in 2000, it's a needed facility. And for our kids, we need to support them in all the ways we can. And this is a fantastic facility. And I want us to continue to work on great programs like this one.
Seeing no more comments, we are going to vote on this. A yes vote would be to approve. So, Member Larson. Oh, we don't have to. Perfect. Is there any objection to approval? No? It's approved. Thank you so much, gentlemen. All right, so our next one is a presentation for Valley Pathways School.
On this one or the last one?
Okay, so do you want to go first? All right, Dr. Paramo.
Thank you, Madam President.
Should we bring it to the floor?
Yeah, sorry. I'm sorry. Can someone move this, please?
I move 13-074 Valley Pathways, 95% design.
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. We need to give the public a chance to comment if anybody has comments on this item. All right, seeing no comments on this item, I'm turning it over to Dr. Paramo. Thank you.
Thank you, and I'll take responsibility for taking our president away from the protocol. I was speaking to her at the time. I just wanted to comment on Valley Pathways School 95% design to let the board know that administration did become more heavily involved in the design and the decisions made on the building. The original group that had worked with the building was from Valley Pathways, and you notice some of the differences in the design. The folks at the building were used to a certain structure because they were in portables, but we really didn't have the inquiry and the questioning in regard to if we were to build a school, what would your program look like then? And so one of the major changes, a couple of them that you'll see, I'm going to take responsibility that they weren't caught before in the 65 and we had to go back to it. One was lockers. High school kids do need lockers. They are not moving from building to building as before where they needed their coats and backpacks. So they do need a place to put their belongings that is secure. We did add lockers back. And I know one of the pieces that was very creative and highly liked were those little cubbies. And as a supervisor for many years of schools, you do not want to create cubbies for kids. And so I did request administration to go back to, to much chagrin because a lot of work was put into it. But I appreciate the architects redesigning and taking our input into a school that can be used 50 years from now, not just for one particular program. And so I wanted to preface this presentation with a lot of these changes came from my administration after that presentation that was before, because some of those items caught me by surprise as well. And I just want to take responsibility that I led this charge. And if there was a problem with it, it really did come from my requests. Thank you.
We got one question, if I could, to the
Yes.
This is to the superintendent. I know Valley Pathways has been in two different locations. How long has Valley Pathways been in portables in two different locations? I know this is well overdue, so.
Through the chair, I believe this is the 13th year for Valley Pathways, and they were CU Online initially and then had moved, and I believe they've been in these portables for 11 years.
Okay. Now it's your turn.
Okay. My name's John Weir. I'm the architect with McCool Carlson Green, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about Valley Pathways. We've been working on this project for about 6 months, and we completed the drawings in March, and we had our review meetings with the school district today. April and May will be bidding the project. We'll start construction in May, June, and then we'll have a full year of construction, and we'll be ready in July of 2014. I'm sorry. Occupancy in August of 2014. The design process has gone fairly smoothly. We've been working in design work sessions with the school staff, project management, school administration, and we've had strong review meetings. And since the 65%, we have made some changes to the plans to accommodate some of the broader needs in terms of flexibility in the near and long term. We developed a supplemental ed spec related to specifically to Valley Pathway to customize the program to meet their specific needs. In terms of the educational program, many of you know, it's a 7 through 12. It's got individual learning plans. It's computer-driven blended learning. They don't have any music or shop interests in terms of, that we had in the Sioux Valley prototype, so we've modified those spaces. And then there's a sort of limited extracurricular activity. Some of the building highlights were a nice and formal commons area, making sure that the library was a strong media learning lab, that the classrooms were arranged around the perimeter and using the science in the middle so that it could be used in a more flexible approach, improved security and supervision. A number of classrooms increased based on our changes from the 65%, and they are more, they're similar, so there's a lot of parity between the classrooms, so they can be used in various functions now and in the future. As mentioned, we added some locker rooms, and we do have fitness and exercise rooms to encourage wellness. In terms of budget management, we have $17.5 million for the budget. We've structured some ad alternates to take advantage of our bidding climate and execute them as we find out where our bids are in May, June. This is a copy of the site plan. As you can appreciate, if you've been to Valley Pathway, the site is very tight. We pushed the school through a major grading to the south, and the new pad for the school, it comes off the road up to the top of the screen, and then there's a parking lot to the south. So it's got good south-facing windows, and it utilizes as much of the site as we can. We do have a well and septic on site. The floor plan, as you can see, the classrooms have changed around the perimeter. They have the same amenities. And in the middle, we put the science rooms so they could be shared by both sides of the building. The commons has a good relationship with the front entry and administration so that they've got good security and control. And then we've got a gym to the north. This is a rendering of the exterior. We're currently developing the final pickups and changes to develop the bid documents. We will have a color board available and be meeting with administration to review that likely next week. So with that, I'll turn it over to any questions.
Do we have any questions? Any comments from the board? Mr. Chisholm.
Oh, I just wanted to compliment Dr. Hirano that the decision to get those lockers back in there, I think, was really, really crucial. I think it was a good decision, and this looks like a great plan. So.
All right, any other comments? Mr. Larson.
On the well, I see that you're going to have to put a new well in because you couldn't get city water in.
That's correct.
Is there ever going to be a time that city water can be moved into there?
We would need to negotiate easements through private properties, and the borough continues to seek that as an option down the road. At this time, there isn't an easement available, so we have a well, and we're proofing it this weekend.
How deep will the well be?
It's 150-ish feet, and we've got about 15 feet of screen, about 30 GPM a minute.
Interesting. My comment to this whole thing is about time. I mean, these kids have been in portables for 11, 12 years now, and the portables haven't been new. There have been a lot of used portables, and this design, I think, will work very well and very good job.
All right. With that and seeing no more comments, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any objection to passing this 95%? All right. This passes. Thank you.
I would like to move 13-075, Fiscal Year 14 Preliminary Budget Resolution.
I'll second that.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Is there anybody in the public who would like to comment before we move on? All right, we've already had our administrative report on this, so we are just looking at the preliminary budget resolution. This is what we would be sending to the borough. It needs to be there by April 1st. So opening opening this up for comment and discussion. No comment and discussion.
I just thought April 1st is a really good day, that's all.
We're turning it in before April 1st. I think this is because it was explained and presented so well to us and also to the public. And so with no comments, Mr. Larson.
I've been on the board for 5 years or so, and I know Sarah's been on it a lot longer. And since our budget now is transparent on the front, I can remember some long board meetings and some heated arguments over this budget. But I believe that since we're totally transparent with the budget and it's totally online and totally open to the public, things will run smooth now. And I really appreciate the work that the district has done to do that. It's really appreciated. Thank you.
Member Welton.
I'd just like to say, 1 year we were handed calculators and rulers and pens and told to go through the budget and figure out what we wanted to slash. That was what we did for our budgets. So this is fantastic. Thank you.
All right. Without any further comment, approval of the preliminary budget resolution. Is there any objection to forwarding this on to the borough? All right, that passes. We're sending that on to the borough. Thank you very much. We are down to non-action items. Our first non-action item is a discussion item of the high school program of studies. Dr. Promo.
Thank you, Madam President. Over the last many years, I guess 4 or 5 since I've been here, the board has really had major discussion in regard to the type of program we want to offer our students. Many a board policy had been changed and updated, as well as AR. I know Member Lacey has been a big part of that, especially at Mat-Su Central School with some of their curriculum, so he's seen it firsthand. And there's been quite a bit of change, and I wanted to share the culminating document and the culminating work. You have it before you in a written format, or printed format, rather. However, this is totally electronic. It can be accessed. Mr. Lacey's using the electronic version. It can be accessed by anyone in the public. I wanted you to have a mind's eye picture of your school district's high school program of studies, which is quite stellar. We have as far as high school courses and work and credits, it's quite regulated by the state of Alaska. So much of our work is turned in and audited. And we received word that the state would like to use the work of Janine Sparks, our counseling coordinator, as a template for the state. And so at this time, I would like the whole piece presented now that pretty much I believe we're at the end of our major board policy and administrative regulation changes. A few will come through, but I think it's a positive move in the right direction. It's good for kids. It's easily readable for both adults and students as well. And with that, I'm just going to turn it over. We're quite proud of it, and I believe you will be too. Ms. Sparks.
Is it okay? Okay. Madam President, honorable school board members, and Superintendent Dr. Paramo, good evening. I'm Janine Sparks, and as Dr. Paramo said, I'm the counseling coordinator, and this is my first year in this position. Prior to that, I worked at Wasilla High for 15 years as a school counselor, and it's an honor to speak to you tonight. So a few months ago, I put together a committee with counselors, student specialist support. I'm nervous. I'm sorry. Let me back up. A person from student support, as well as curriculum experts, to review the program of studies. And we went through line by line. We spent an entire day just going through it and asking questions. What do we need to keep? What do we need to add? How can we make this a better document? And then with the help of a couple people that I'd like to recognize, Shara Habig and Melissa Krause, their technical support was amazing. And so I'd like to talk just a few minutes about what a program of studies is. It's a reference manual for both in our district and outside of our district. When we have students move into our district and we have questions about their transcript, we go to their school of origin and look at the program of studies to determine how to award credit, you know, when they transfer in. And it allows all of us as professionals and you to look and see what we're doing. Every year it should be updated. It's a working in progress at all times. So if you notice anything that needs to be corrected, please, I'd like to know. I'd like to just take a few minutes and go through it and so that you can know what it is. So it's over 150 pages, and so it's, I think, a little easier if I just go through it on hard copy. The first page 4 and, well, it says 4 and 2, but write the school listings. I asked the principals to write a description of each of their schools so that we could see the diversity of what is offered in our school district. And you can see a sense of pride in their descriptions. And then if you'll move along to the next few pages, you'll see that we have 3 different graduation requirements in our high school right now. This is real important as, you know, students are in different classes, what is required. And then some of the work that we've done this school year is to work on our other credit options and have those simplified, as well as have more of a school site management of this kind of work on the, and this is page 15 and 16. And then if you'll move to Common Paths, I just want to talk about this for a minute. This is a helpful document. It is not a rigid document, but it's a helpful document when parents or new counselors or you, a student goes into 9th grade and they're placed in a level of English, for example, it gives a common path. So if they start out with needing, for example, Read 180, what would it look like through 4 years of English if they stayed in that path? And then that was given in all 4 cores. So again, it's not a rigid path, but it's a common path. Then if you'll please move to page 26. We wanted to go through in the previous program of studies, the way it was organized was by subject, but it was all alphabetical. It was a little bit confusing. We wanted to put it in numerical order, putting the core first. So English is first, and it starts with their course numbers start with 1. So anyway, this is a very readable course description. It lets you know if you can take the course for multiple times for credit, what grade level should be in that class. And the APS is for the Alaska Performance Scholarship, which I'll go over in a few minutes. And then by the beginning of next school year, I'll have this updated with all of the NCAA eligibility requirements. So at a glance. So within each of the core, if you'll turn the page 27, they're alphabetized and they're also grouped. So for example, English 1 on page 29, all the levels of English 1 are grouped together. So you can see if there's a remedial class, a regular class, an honors class, it's all together. Before, when it was all alphabetical, it was, again, if you didn't know the course existed, you might not know there were different levels offered. So, and then it goes through the 4 core and through fine arts. And then I'm just going to keep moving along. The next section is the career and technical education classes that are offered. And I'm not going to go through those, but those are alphabetized as well. And then moving to APEX, which is page 90. This is a listing of, and again, this is a dynamic document, and the courses that are listed here are what we offer in our district, but there's also course descriptions for the content in those courses. So those can be referred to as well. And then I'd like to talk for a minute about these forms. I so appreciate Melissa's work in creating these electronic forms. These represent and reflect the changes in board policy and administrative regulation. Almost all of these documents will be housed in the school and in a student's CUM file. So, and again, these are just updated and really user-friendly. So the first section of forms are attached to board policy and administrative regulation. On page 125, there are three different credit checks, and these are what I'm calling best practice forms. They're not attached to administrative regulation or board policy, but they're up-to-date credit checks, which a counselor would use, but also a parent or a student could use. We've written these and put these on an electronic format. They reflect our school's, our district's graduation requirements as also the Alaska Performance Scholarship, so you can do a check on both. And then, again, there's just a few forms that are not attached to board policy, but just good practice with the off-campus agreement and the student aid form and the transcript review. I'd like to talk just a moment about the Alaska Performance Scholarship. About 3 years ago in the Parnell administration, they passed they call it the Governor's Scholarship. It's been a little bit confusing because people think that that's the UA Scholars Scholarship. That's separate. That's through the university. This is funded through the legislature. They have had increasing rigorous and specific requirements. So if you'll note, the requirements for class of 2013 and 14 are vague. They're not specific. They just say 4 units of math, and these are just units that districts can determine. If you turn the page, starting with 2015, which are our current sophomores, that gets very specific. They have to take the courses that are listed, the core classes that are listed, and then they give districts, there's a blank there, for districts to have to vet their courses to make sure that they meet the 2012 state standards. And so if you'll turn the page, we did that. And so if the next page, this was a massive undertaking. A standard means that it's listed and it's a standard course and acceptable for the Alaska Performance Scholarship. Equivalent means, like, for example, English 1 is equivalent to a standard. It is both literature and composition. And then we also, acceptable additions that could go down in that blank would be the courses that are listed as additional courses. Each one of these courses was vetted, and each form that says that there's a course approval form on file have gone through to say what standards they meet. In case we're ever audited, we can justify recommending the student for the Alaska Performance Scholarship. So those go through the four cores. And then finally, in the RTI, we just have, if you look on page 149 and 150, those are the current, this is a draft, but those are the current numbers for RTI and placement for prescriptive scheduling. So I've gone through this really fast. Any questions or?
Member Lacey.
Yes, this has to do with the APS system. But as I look down through all these classes, starting on page 148, there's no place in there for vocational classes. So if I get this right, to get the performance scholarship, you have to spend all your time in academic classes and no vocational education classes. Is that what I'm getting from this?
At this point for our district, unless there was a cross-reference where we recognized a certain CTE course also met a a science, for example, a science class. I'm sorry, I should have referred to it. But at this point, you're right.
So, I mean, it's not on our level that the problem is. It's on the Parnell level that this whole thing discriminates against, I guess. Or
Dr. Prama? Thank you, Madam President. Basically, the performance scholarship is really encouraging kids to take four core, what they call four square, which is four science, four social studies, four English, and four math, which would be 16 credits. And our credit requirements right now are 22.5, I believe. We're going to recommend that they go to 24. And they have, I believe, 28. 28 potential credits. So within our own graduation requirements, they need to take 7.5 electives, which many are career and technical or music and arts. But for to qualify for the scholarship, you would have had to have a diploma from your district, which would include those. But what they specify for the scholarship is that you have to take four core. What was happening was that kids weren't taking four core. And even our requirements, believe it or not, in MATSU, we have the highest math requirement because we specify three maths in the state right now. But yet for the scholarship, it says four. So I wouldn't say that they're discouraging it. I would just say that they're not, because you do have to graduate with your diploma from your district, in which it would include those electives. But they did not specifically outline them, is where you're absolutely correct.
Member Larson?
So in the career tech, though, the core courses are still there. Is that correct?
There you go. Go ahead. Okay. Through the president. Yes.
Member Rutherford?
I just wanted to say wow. When I first opened this electronic version and started looking at it, it was like I was looking at a multidisciplinary college booklet, and it was just, it's pretty intuitive as far as being able to read it, and I just, and it really lays out how much we offer here. I just think it was really well done.
Thank you. Member Tootham?
Well, yes, there are some classes there I'd like to take. On page 149 and 150, that's a real basic question. I'm sure I'm the only one who doesn't know. But what's the process if, you know, if a student comes into a teacher, let's say it's a tier one, three or two class, and the teacher thinks this student really could handle the advanced class equivalent to that, to move to a different, to an advanced core whatever the other, what's the process if the teacher sits down with the student and the parent and they agree that they would like to do that? How easy is it and what do they do to move from one tier to another?
Dr. Prama?
Thank you. I'll go ahead and speak to the response to instruction. Basically, this is a process whereby we ensure that we are offering the correct courses for which children, where they're ready to learn. So you'll notice that there are RIT scores and other assessments that we use to determine where are the holes in the student's learning, and then how can we teach to those holes. And so the goal is to always get them out of the red, get them out of the yellow, and get them into the two greens. However, you might have a student, and Ms. Sparks can speak to this, that they're in school, that they're in English 1, but they should be in honors English, and their parents really want them to do it, and the student says as well, you know, essentially the answer to that is you boost them up if they want to work, mm-hmm. you know, to that level, that mm-hmm. we always look to serve the student where they'd like to be. But many times what was happening is that we would have one kind of course for all kids, and some of them would basically we would fail our students because we would teach what we thought they needed, but without using the information that they needed. And so it really assists teachers in being able to know what students need and what to teach them at what moment, because we actually really definely deliver the curriculum that the kids need. And the idea is to speed up their learning so they can get into the core, which is the green. And we want 80% of our kids. The goal is for 80% of our kids to be in a green.
Thank you.
Member Larson.
And just with that, to the chair, to Dr. Promo, you test coming out of elementary and you test out of coming out of middle school in order to place these children into these tiers, is that correct? And that's something that we've just started in the last couple of years, and you've seen some good results for that?
Through the chair, you are correct. We use measures of academic progress, as well as we'll include some other formative assessments. And we actually, when I was at Cottonwood, we started doing some of those assessments, but over the last couple of years, they've become standardized in every school. And we use this information leaving eighth grade to determine what high school courses we need. Do we need more advanced courses? Do we need more core courses? You know, do we need more Algebra 1s because kids are ready for Algebra 1s, or are they ready for more geometry courses? And so we really base our master schedules on this, and it is really highly standardized so that the schools can customize what they offer. But they use the data to determine that so that we have efficiencies and best practices. But it is standardized, and the best model for high school is to use their eighth grade information, and then from then on you use the course information mm-hmm. as well as the grades. Those are the most accurate for high school, because once you hit high school, it does matter credits, whereas mm-hmm. in elementary and middle school, it is kind of what you learned. But in high school, it definitely, the way that you matriculate is through gaining credits.
All right, I don't see any more comments. I would just like to make one. This is great for parents to be able to take a look at it. You know, I think many parents just rely on their students, and they mm-hmm. say, so do you have enough credits? Mm-hmm. Are you going to be graduating? It's nice to know that there's something there for parents to look at, and they can cross it off and know with some assurance that their children are achieving and will be graduating.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, so we are down to future items, future business. I'm just going to read through. We have April 3rd is our special recognitions. It starts at 5 o'clock for our special recognitions, and 6 o'clock regular school board meeting here at the central office. Then April 9th, we have our joint borough assembly and board meeting, where we will be making our presentation on the budget. Also, there is, if people have items they want put on that agenda, if they'd let us know and we can forward those to the borough to be on the agenda. And let's see, then we have April 17th at Trapper Creek Elementary. Is there any other future items, future business? All right. Is there? Oh, wow. We're to our second person to be heard on non-agenda items. Member Welton.
Do you want me to repeat the?
Oh, no, please don't.
I'm
sorry.
Is there anyone who wishes to speak to the board on non-agenda items? Please come forward and state your name.
All right. So no more comments to the board this evening. Correspondence and board committee reports. Do we have any board committee reports? Member Welton.
I just want to say in the consent agenda, we passed the policies. There's a meeting scheduled for next Tuesday. I would like to postpone or cancel that one because the 3000 series and the 4000 series are kind of long, and I would like to have a little more time for staff to work on that. They've been working hard on
the budget and things, so I would like to have a little more time. And at this time, I don't know what is 1 month is what, the 23rd of April? Yeah, the 23rd, and we'll go ahead and schedule that for the 23rd. And then if there's anybody who has any issues with any of those policies that they can't get sorted out through the administration stuff, then to bring up questions to the policy committee. Thank you.
All right. Do we have any more board committee reports? Is there any correspondence that people would like to? All right. Comments from the school board and administration. We'll go with administration first.
Mr. Polk, do you have any comments? Mr. Stone?
No comments.
No, Madam President. Thank you.
Mrs. Kendra McPhail, Miss Kendra McPhail, do you have any comments tonight? All right, so school board, Mr. Larson.
Thank you. I appreciate the hard work on this high school program of studies. When I opened it up, I'll have to admit that I was pretty confused and wanted to wait till tonight to hear your presentation, and I appreciate it very much. And congratulations on two new schools going to start construction this year. Yay. I'm excited to see that happen. There was a lot of work put into that from all staff, and it's going to be fun to watch them be created. Thank you.
Member Cheatham?
Let's see. Well, I wanted to thank staff for back in both the presentation of the high school program of studies and Mr. Fulp, the budget presentation both here and I was so lucky to be able to sit in and listen with the conversation with you and member Rutherford. It's an amazing document, and I'm so glad I'm here now and not when we were being passed out calculators and rulers and so forth.
Member Welton.
Great job on all of the work. I'm always so pleased, and we get kudos all around all the time. People tell me at least how great the school district is, and I'm headed down to Juneau, so I want to hear our kudos down there too. I know we'll do it, and Dr. Promo is going to be doing a presentation for the School Board Association, so I'm looking forward to that.
Member Rutherford.
Oh, just thank you again to administration and to Chief Financial Officer Fulp for putting up with my more than 25 questions today, and I'm very impressed with our budget document.
Member Lacey.
Yes, tomorrow I'm going to go and judge some of the Skills USA competitions in Anchorage that is going on the latter part of this week. It's an organization I've been involved with since about 1974. My next thing is, in keeping with our board policy about buying local products, I'd like to know if the Havermeister Dairy is in a position to provide milk for the Mat-Su School District.
We'll get that information to you. All right. I just wanted to make one last comment. Thank you for this budget. I feel very positive going forward to the borough, presenting this to them. It is easily understandable. There's plenty of information, and I think we should do well with the borough this year. And with that, we're moving on to executive session. If somebody can.
I'd like to make a motion that we move into executive session, Madam President.
No, I'm sorry. We are not having an executive session today. So with that, can somebody move the
end of the
meeting?
I'd like to make a motion that we end this meeting, Madam President.
I'll second that.
All right. Moved and seconded. We're done.